You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Welcome to Half Hour with Jeff and Richie, the podcast where we take a deeper dive into the latest shows we see, sharing our insights and opinions on the performances, storyline, and everything in between.
In today's episode, we'll be discussing Second Stage Theater's production of Appropriate on Broadway. Whether you're unable to catch the show in person or you're looking to enhance your experience after seeing it, this episode is for you.
And as always, we want to give you a heads up that this episode will contain spoilers. So if you're ready to dive into this production, stick around with us. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Richie. We're thrilled to be your hosts for today's episode. So without further ado, let's start the conversation about Appropriate.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Half hour!
Welcome, everyone, to our new episode of Half Hour with Jeff and Richie. Today, we're going to talk about the off-Broadway production. Today, we're going to talk about the Broadway production of Appropriate.
Appropriate is a new play from Pulitzer Prize finalist and Obie Award winner Brandon Jacob Jenkins and Drama Desk Award winner Lila Neugebauer, featuring a talented cast led by Sarah Paulson and Corey Stoll. In this darkly comic American family drama presented by Second Stage Theater, the Lafayette family gathers at their late patriarch's Arkansas home to confront his estate. As secrets unravel and tensions mount, the family must reckon with their past and the ghosts that haunt them. Join us on a riveting exploration of family dynamics, buried resentments, and the enduring power of love in this compelling theatrical production. So this is an interesting update on Appropriate. Is it's ending its original run at Second Stage in early March, and then it's going to be dark for a few weeks, and then in late March it's going to come back to Broadway. Same exact production with the majority of the cast at the Belasco Theater, and it's going to run all spring into June, the Belasco Theater. So it was a very difficult ticket to get this winter, and so I think being in a bigger space for another 3 months will really help with the overall aesthetic of the show and also getting people to see it. So we just sort of letting you all know that we did see this at the Helen Hayes Theater on Broadway with the original cast ever today.
Which is exciting because I feel like everyone is going to need to see this play.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, let's start with our bold statement about the piece and let's see how that unfolds into this conversation. Your turn first.
Bold statement. My bold statement I'm going to start with, not only is this play and the execution of this play and the performers in this play brilliant in every aspect, I will make sure I say in my bold statement that I believe Brandon Jacob Jenkins is the next Tennessee Williams or August Wilson of the modern day. And I will say that proudly.
Bold statement. My bold statement on this is finally on Broadway, I feel like we're getting some really great new playwriting that deserves to be there. And
totally.
I was absolutely blown away by this production.
I have been waiting for a long time for playwrights to write a family drama, because when you look at Tennessee Williams, I'm using Tennessee Williams and August Wilson because those are two prolific playwrights of the 20th century who wrote family drama about race, about gender, about changing times, about family, about generational problems. There's so much that those plays did. And then we see so many plays lately, and of course, comedy is its own thing, but we see so many plays, dramas lately, where they're like about, I don't know, they're like, okay. And but then you have such complexity in this production of Appropriate, and you are unraveling and unfolding as the minutes go on in this play, and you're learning more and you're learning more, and there's never a dull moment. And it's an almost 3-hour play that feels like I'm sitting there for 25 minutes because things are just rolling and rolling and rolling. And then you're also with this brilliant director and this brilliant cast and this gorgeous set, and everything is just unraveling, and you're just left literally, I'm sitting in the last 5 minutes of the play at the end of my seat.
I'm literally
watching the ending. We're going to talk about the ending a little bit, but just the overall production before we dive in, really, really smart storytelling.
100% agree with you. And it just had so many of those great moments where you were like, you're on the edge of your seat, or you don't know what's going to happen next. And it was just like great in that way. So let's get into the plot here.
Well, and let's start at the beginning, you know, a very good place to start. When we have these three siblings coming together and their families, and they're coming together for the estate, you're already trusting your audience when we don't quite 100% know the relationship. Mm-hmm. And we're not saying, how many plays, Jeff, have you seen which start with, I haven't seen my brother in 20 years. I wonder when he walks through that door. And then as an audience, like, okay, she hasn't seen the brother in 20 years. We're not spelled out with that. The playwright is already trusting the audience that they're breaking through a window. Who is that? What's the relation? Oh, and then they're talking about Sarah Paulson. She's the older sibling taking over the estate. There's another brother that comes, and immediately there's anger and there's hatred and there's yelling and there's frustration. A lot of times that comes later in a play. And we're starting with her saying, what are you doing here? Get out of here. And there was a part of me that's like, whoa, 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 Sarah Paulson, you're starting out at 10. What's going on? And in, I will be honest, in the beginning of her starting at 10, a lot of times you learn in theater and acting, like, you build up to the 10, and she's starting at the 10. And I was like, whoa, 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 why are we yelling? It's 10 minutes in. But then it allows you to realize, oh no, there's a whole backstory and there's a reason why she's yelling. And you almost want to say, like, relax. Like, why are you yelling? Like, he just got here. And you're like, no, 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 no. There's a whole reason, which actually a lot of the reasons you find out throughout, but then there's the big reason for that brother way at the end that you find out. So again, the way this was structured, the family dynamic and the way things unravel about the father, mm-hmm. and how you're learning. And it's not, I wonder if dad was this, oh, look what we found. But instead it was like, look, we found this photo album, and oh, don't look at it. Don't. What? And as the audience, you're like, what? What's in the photo album? And you don't really even know for a while. And you are once again trusted with this audience to say, oh, it's something really bad.
Well, it's something that you kind of really have to appreciate with newer playwrights here. And what I'm going to praise Brendan Jacob Jenkins on here. And this is something what you just recently talked about with Maxwell Friedlich, who is the playwright of the job. There's a difference in this playwriting where you can feel that Brandon is almost writing for the TV or for the film, and he's giving you that like intro scene. So, you know, we have the younger brother appearing first in this play, breaking into the house, even though it's his deceased father's home. And it's setting it up in that kind of like spooky, eerie, like TV series or horror film, something like that. And that shows, to me, great writing, because it's immediately getting your viewer invested into the piece to really kind of start figuring out the pieces. And not everything needs to be a puzzle. I understand that. But for me, and my bias in here is that I love a puzzle. Maybe. I don't know if you feel the same way.
Yeah, I like being able to go along with the audience and have the oohs and ahs and discover and not spell it all out to me. Let me discover it with these actors, with the audience. And you're also, and also I always think what's brilliant about like a Tennessee Williams and August Wilson play is the themes, mm-hmm. An object in the home, a specific theme. So the fact that we start the play, and I don't know if you noticed this, in the first like 3 minutes, it's dark and it's just the cicadas. And the audience was in our show we were at was like, oh my God, it was uncomfortable because we hear cicadas, but it was filling, the room was full of the cicadas. You almost thought they were going to start crawling around you because they were so, and then you
learned.
It was
funny because it was like that like Bugs Life moment in Disney when you're at that show and you're like, wow.
And And then we learn, and then there's also the theme, and we're going to get into the whole racial element of this too in a second, and the problems with the siblings and the father, but there's also the theme of trees
Yeah.
And there's constant discussion throughout the whole piece about trees. There's a painting over the doorway of a tree in a field, and the lights would always highlight that before it went black out before the next scene. And I always said, like, why is that painting that's like chipping away up there? Like, why is that? Why is there a tree? Like, a lot of times in a home, you see like a floral, or you would see something, but like an image of someone, but the tree. And then you realize the tree and cicadas. And at one point, one of the characters says, the cicadas gather around the tree. They come out of the ground. If you want to see, they stay away from the trees and the cicadas because they can get caught in your hair. And they're mating.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. And there's such symbolism there. Mm-hmm. Because then you later learn that the photo album they find is of this horrific thing that's happening in trees. And then the brother later in the show goes to the trees, gets rid of the photo album. That just the tree is. And then, of course, at the very end, a literal tree grows in this home. And whether that's suspension of disbelief, like if you're sitting there thinking a tree wouldn't grow like that in the home, you're already then thinking the wrong way about this. Because, of course, vines and things can grow through a home if it's abandoned for so long. But this looks like the tree grew from the root of the home, symbolizing the rooted racism of this family. And there's just so much going on here. And to show a theatricality of a literal tree growing through the home at the end, that's theater to me. Maybe you wouldn't see that in a film, but you're seeing that on Broadway, because at the very, very, very last 2 minutes of this play, here's this big tree growing through this abandoned home. And as the family abandoned the home, the father, the siblings abandoned each other for the most part, what's left is the reminder of what still happens here. It blows my mind that that was written the way it was, and that the symbolism of trees and cicadas, and that was wonderful. So I know that's a whole theme, but I skipped around to a million moments there, but I just had to address the theming here.
It is a whole theme I don't know even where to pick out, like, what's the biggest thing that you kind of want to tackle in the deeper dive here, but like, there is such an interesting narrative here around family trauma here, and also like how they all deal with the past and learning about their father, and what do they take with them, what is left behind, and what do they try to erase.
We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome back. And as you have these three siblings, when the photo album's found, it's like one sibling is calling people to get a market quote price on selling it to make money. The other one has like a real world like moment of like a coming of age moment where he throws it in the river and says, I'm a new person now, right? And then you have Sarah Paulson again, and says, please don't. I found her monologue at the top of the stairs at the end of the show to be extremely moving. Mm-hmm. And I saw her say after, and that was where it was so interesting. That's where she came down, not in acting, in her vocal energy. And she brought it down because it was almost as if I'm screaming this whole show, you're not hearing me, and now you are going to hear me. And I'm going to literally, this is where direction was brilliant. I'm going to literally stand higher than you and look down to you and tell you, I want you to really pretend, not trying to be dramatic. I'm just really want you to pretend that I died. Please don't ever speak to me again. I am going to walk away from here and I'll never speak to you again. And I don't want to be talked to and pretend that I died. So, and how many of the, and she was the one who like trusted her father and would say, please, why are we talking about him like this? He's dead. Why does it matter what his past was? But the others were like, no, he had this horrible, whether he did it or not, doesn't matter. He had the jars in the home. He had the hood in the home that the little boy found. He had the photo album that everyone was fascinated with throughout the whole piece. Where's the photo album? Who's looking at the photo album? What day or night it is? They're looking at the photo album. There's a fascination for these.
Well, I feel like what would be a big question to ask Brandon here, too, is like, why did he feel like, one, he's taking this like white American family that has this rooted racism clearly from the father. We don't know. The kids try to defend the father saying, well, that was never him, or was it him? And then they try to go in through other things, not just through racism of skin color, but also racism or towards religions, and hearing the different things, like one of the son's wives is Jewish and how he was towards Jewish people. And it's just it's interesting to kind of pull in there and see, like, why would he want to write something like this? And also, where, what is he trying to tackle in talking about this? Is he trying to say, like, he hears many people trying to erase that past, that it didn't exist anymore, or there are people that are trying to keep it alive, or is it a monetary issue? Because you hear about things in Alabama and stuff. I've seen a TikTok where a girl literally went into an estate sale and saw all of this very racist dolls and pictures and stuff like this that was getting sold, and people were buying. So, like, where does that come from?
It's clear that the playwright wanted to highlight so many things. How a modern, there's that whole monologue. I believe Corey Stoll gives a monologue. He's like, I was not racist. Why am I dealing with this problem? And he has that whole problem of, like, why am I the one dealing with this? I didn't live 100 years. You know, like, he has that whole monologue. There's the monetary issue. Money is a huge part of this. There's the anti-Semitism moments in this piece. There's even a slight sense of, there's ageism. There's different. What is, and the word appropriate, of course, is throughout all this. What's appropriate to do with money? What's appropriate for the children to see and not see? What's appropriate to know about the uncle who raped a girl? And what was appropriate for his new girlfriend to know or not know? And there's so many things that are appropriate or inappropriate. And then in the world today, we're constantly tackling, like, what's appropriate to say, what's inappropriate to say. And I think what's fascinating about this is this was happening in a family. This was not strangers in a public space. A lot of times what we see is appropriate and not appropriate on social media or when we're in public and all that. And what we see public facing, this was in a family home with a closed door circuit of family. And yet still there was problems with people not understanding or agreeing. And it just highlights what is extremely difficult about our past as Americans, what is about our past. And then there is a heart here because you feel for these people. You feel sadness for these three siblings and what they're dealing with and how some of them try to escape it and some of them don't. And then it's like, do you feel the biggest presence is the father and yet he's nowhere to be found? But you feel like some of them really feel bad for the father. Some of them say, oh, he's racist. We should forget about him. It's fascinating. The whole thing is so layered. It's wonderful.
It's so layered, too. And, like, I feel like there's another big thing here, too. It's like appropriate. Is it appropriate to appropriate the photos and this whole past? Because that's also a big thing here. Like, making money off of racist past.
And anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
I want to say two other things about that. One is, well, I did feel when Sarah Paulson has that monologue about no one left on this earth has ever held me as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I even held you two, meaning her brothers. And the only person left on this earth that had held her was her father. And so she said, I don't have anybody left on this earth who held me as a child. That was a moment where she still felt for the father, regardless of the past. And it's interesting how unconditional love in the world exists with so many people. Regardless of the past, you will love someone unconditionally. There was a whole element there. And then I will also say this. It's fascinating to me that they left that house. And what seemed to be understood anyway, as I took it, was One of those siblings was going to sell the house and move on. They were just going to sell it. They were going to not do the estate sale anymore, and they were going to split the money three ways, and they were just going to move on. That's how it kind of felt, right? Would you agree? And then as they flash forward and flash forward, there's a party going on. A brick is thrown through the window. There's mice in the garbage. You're realizing, oh my gosh, all this time is going on. No one took care of the house. The house was left. They left each other, and they left everything, and it was looking out of sight, out of mind. And I'm sitting there wondering, were there bills? Were they coming after the siblings to pay taxes and sell the home? And what was going on? And then when you see the tree, and then it's like what seems to be a realtor or a appraisal, or someone from a bank, someone's there, and you're watching. He's like looking at this tree, and you're left with this image of like, how many years do we think really? It takes a long time for a tree to grow. So if you're assuming that what could have been many years have gone by. Yeah. And stuff is still left there. It's a reminder that our past still stays, regardless of if we want to say out of sight, out of mind or not. But it was fascinating that those siblings left the house like that.
The past stays, but does the story continue?
Yeah.
And I think that's what we really take away from this, too, at the end, is that this family story ended with the father.
Yeah. And yet the family didn't grow to continue the family of, like, one of them could have said, you know what? Yes, there's racist past here. We're going to now set a new standard because they didn't want to continue there. They all lived in different parts of the country. They all were dealing with very different things in their internal immediate families with children and spouses and whatnot. I could just keep talking. I know we're going to move on to some.
Yeah, but there were so many of those things between the three characters and the family's dynamic in general is that they were only kept together because of the father. Tony, Sarah Paulson's character, hated her brothers because they were not around to take care of the father. One was a, you know, alcoholic and pedophile, and mm-hmm. the other was a New York City man who ran away from this home to start a life with his family now and make a lot of money. And his idea was that I'm going to just pay for dad, and I funded all of this, so I was here. I get the get out of jail free card. Like, this doesn't matter to me. And because of that, like, the three of them had no relationship to continue on. It was literally right. just the father. And I feel like we hear so much of that from parents all the time on, like, who's going to continue on our legacy of the family? And, like, what does that actually mean?
It's so true. And that's why I think it was important that there were children characters there. Because was it comical in a way that all this physical fighting was happening? I think it was the end of Act 2 or Act 3. And all of a sudden, this boy comes out with this hood. Like, oh, my God, this is crazy. That's
crazy.
Like, and everyone's like, oh, wow, awkwardly. And it was, I think people were laughing because it was the little boy who was barely kind of in the show is the one who comes out with it. But it's like so scary that that's existing in the home. I'm scared.
Yeah,
it's bizarre. It's not funny. But
no,
everyone
people
was
are
laughing.
Laughing because it's
uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable.
Right.
It's uncomfortable. Theater. The whole right. fact that the three major parts, if you are basically saying that their father was part of the KKK, is that he had a book full of lynchings. He had body parts in his closet and he had a hood.
Yeah.
The writing's in. It's right there.
Right. And that's why people are, I think, are laughing like, oh, my God, I'm so uncomfortable right now. This is bizarre. And it's the little boy of all people who found it, you know?
Right. Well, that's because the parents said you need to go clean out Grandpa's room and Grandpa's closet because they were having an estate sale. But, you know, we'll keep talking about this over and over again.
I know.
We're
going to move on to some
plot. But, like, I do want to talk about, like, who were the standout
so
actors for you. We'll be right back.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Let's jump back into things.
For me, Sarah Paulson stands out as a tour de force. Definitely a Tony nomination for her. Maybe even a win. This woman knows exactly what she's doing, and she's so dedicated to every move, every vocal. Corey Stoll was wonderful for me. I thought he was really strong as the other brother. And I will say Elle Fanning. She's not transferring to the Belasco with this, but she is playing a character that is very important in all of this.
Super.
And extreme, and a little comedic relief, but also just like such a different dynamic and element. And she, the way she delivered lines, I was with her the whole time. You know, if you're the spouse of or a new, especially a new partner of someone in a family drama scenario, and she's trying to decide how involved am I here and how much should I just go in the kitchen and maybe cook and leave them alone? There's a whole funniness.
We've all been there. We're the outsider in a family fight.
Maybe there's something going on and we're like, okay, I should, or the other brother's wife, how much she wanted to be involved and then was said, no, I'm going to get out of this now. And she has a line I love that she says, I don't like all this fighting. I don't come from all this fighting and I don't want to be a part of this. That was interesting on her, but. Those were the three standouts. They were all wonderful actors. The daughter, everyone was very, very, very strong. It was a really well cast.
Yeah. And it was also interesting to see the dynamic between the kids there, now that we're bringing them up, that their cousin relationships kind of didn't exist. It was even weird at times where they were like, oh, that cousin might have a crush on that cousin, which is kind of like, ooh.
Yeah.
But it was like getting joked on that. And their joke on it was like, well, we are in Arkansas. So
yeah,
it's like,
it was oddly. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And then moving. And like I said earlier, Lila's direction of this is wonderful. I always love full use of a space. Yeah. I feel like the whole stage was used. The upstairs, there's different entrances. And that's what great. You have this. And then here we are seeing this amazing set, which we haven't seen, like a big, gorgeous house like this. And then for those pieces and things to fall apart and break at the end. It's hard to design and execute 8 times a week. But like I said, deciding to put that painting over the door of the tree and realizing the symbolism of that. I was also looking up and I saw like a big hole in the ceiling. And I thought, oh, that must be for lighting. But it was such a big, big hole in the ceiling. And I realized, oh, because the chandelier comes crashing down. The tree obviously comes through in the blackout from there. Mm-hmm. So then you realize later why there's a big hole in the ceiling for some of those things to fly in. Was very cool. And the costumes were really nice. I just thought the whole thing was designed, the lighting and the sound design of those cicadas. It was just all really well designed by all these designers, too.
Yeah, this is definitely getting that mark of, like, they sat in a room together and they designed this show together with the director, and it just, like, worked really well.
Yeah.
I didn't find there to be any, like, let's just stand on the stage and, like, watch someone say their lines. I thought it was directed great. In terms of the set, we love a staircase in a play. I mean, it just makes entrances in and out so much more interesting. It also was the biggest thing for the set for me. We sat stage.
Well, house right, stage left.
House right. So house right is the place to sit because
you can see the full staircase. Yeah.
Direct view of the staircase. But I found... And in the design here, the room behind the staircase to be so interesting.
Mysterious, right? It was a kitchen. No. The kitchen was the other side. So we don't really know what that room was behind the staircase.
Right. It was either a dining room or a study or something, because that's always where the kids kind of came in and out from. And they were always playing with something in that room. But it also, it almost looked like it led to a basement. Staircase behind there. And
well, that's where the party was long into the future when someone broke into the house and had a party. It looked like that was happening downstairs. Yeah.
Yes. But what I also liked about that room being back there is every family member used that room to eavesdrop on what was happening in the other room. So it wasn't just like they were trying to listen to what's happening on stage. They were using it to listen to hearing them talk about each other, because there was a lot of bad talking about the family members, and they were there, so they would then come in. And also the front porch, there was like this whole thing about like, what does the outside world look like?
Mm-hmm.
And you could kind of create that image of, like, while we're sitting there and we're talking, and they're talking about the lake, they're talking about the cemetery, they're talking about the front. And I'm like, oh, I've created this whole vision head of, like, what it looks like out there.
Yeah. And that's what I think is brilliant about a scenic design. And of course, there's places on Broadway for things to be like, I'm thinking of, like, when we saw, like, summer 1976, and it was, like, the strip, like, just a table and chairs and a window. And, like, look, sure, that works in some places. But, like, for something like The Cottage or something like this, you need the full use of the space to understand the dynamic of the family and the home and what this home represents. And it just, I love a big set like that.
Yeah, it just makes sense to have it.
So. Yeah. And before we wrap up really quick, I just want to talk really, really quick about, what do you think the future is of Broadway plays in general, about a play like this, your experience seeing this? Do we need more dramas like this well-written? I think,
1,000%. Yeah, I feel like this is setting the mark for plays like this to work really well. Whatever we're getting from Second Stage and Manhattan Theater Club and Roundabout in terms of plays, it seems to be, like, really hitting the nail on the head there with, like, great works, and especially new works. I mean, this show has the potential to really, like, sweep in the play category this year.
Totally does. And especially since it's extending now to June, and more audiences, more Tony voters will get a chance to go see it. It opens the opportunity to say, yeah, this is going to be a ton of nominations, I'm sure.
And that's an interesting thing that we kind of were talking about in terms of Tony Awards, now that this play is transferring to the Belasco Theater. And I don't know if this has ever really happened before, where a play has moved to a different theater in the same Tony season before the Tonys. What are they able to submit? Like, does this play expand in any way when it moves to the Belasco Theater in terms of set? Is it going to be exactly identical? I mean, we already know that the Elle Fanning is leaving, and I forget the new actor's name who's going into the role, but she's in Feud right now. Is she potentially able to? Like, I just don't know if they're able to submit or not. Would both of those actors be able to? Because I don't know. Is it technically a new production when it moves to the Belasco?
It always goes down to the Tony committee voting. And they'll have to, you know how, like, we see, like, the Tony committee has made new rules of, like, eligibility. They'll just have to vote on what's the best process moving forward. It's a case-by-case basis sometimes.
It'd be super interesting to see what they do there, because I don't know if it's ever happened before. Maybe someone could tell me if it has happened like that.
So. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. We're just about out of time here. I could really continue talking about, I say that all the time, but for this one, I really could spend another half hour.
There were so many deep things to talk about in the actual plot of this play. So
that's
what you got this time.
Yeah. So final thoughts on Appropriate on Broadway, Jeff, go.
Just go see it. You're going to be disappointed if you don't see it. Bravo to Brandon Jacob Jenkins. I love it, and I can't wait to see what else he writes soon.
And I will say, agree with all of that. Brandon Jacob Jenkins is a brilliant playwright. This whole thing is great. I will say one other thing. Kudos to someone like Sarah Paulson, not just coming back to Broadway and doing a revival of a play that's a famous title, you took a new work, you trusted the process, you trusted the playwright, you trusted that audience will come to see it, and you brought a new voice to the stage. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong against revival stunt casting and revivals, like when you see Macbeth come to Broadway, or like Our Town, or some of these big shows with big names. You trusted this new play, and that was admirable for her. And I would say that was wonderful. So kudos to her, Second Stage, and everyone working so hard on this. It's something everyone has to go check out. If you can get to the Helen Hayes Theater the next week, but or if not, when it comes back in late March, to the Belasco for sure.
Definitely.
That does wrap up our discussion on today's episode. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into Appropriate. The show, like I said, is playing at the Hayes Theater. We'll transfer to the Belasco Theater. We'll share the link in our description with ticket information as well.
And don't forget, we want to hear from you. Continue the conversation with us on Instagram and TikTok at Half Hour Podcast, and let us know your thoughts on Appropriate.
And if you enjoyed our show, please leave us a review. Your feedback helps us bring more theater to you. And remember, you can listen to our past episodes and stay tuned for coming ones as well.
Until next time, I'm Jeff.
And I'm Richie, saying ta-ta for now.
Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.